I'm Noor Haider, coming to you from Gadigal land, and this is The Full Story.
So welcome to our supercomputing cell.
Why is it so noisy?
There's so many fans and pumping equipment keeping the systems operating and cool, they generate an awful lot of noise.
Australia wants in on the artificial intelligence boom, but data centres needed to run AI require huge amounts of electricity, generate a
renewable energy.
As demand surges, experts are flagging concerns about the impact the industry will have on Australia's net zero transition and our drinking water supply. Today, climate and environment reporter Petra Stock on the growing environmental impact of AI data centres. It's Wednesday, the 14th of January. Hi, Petra. It's great to have you back on Full Story.
Oh, hi. It's nice to be back.
Australia is keen to ride the AI boom with dozens of new investments in data centres across the country, including Sydney and Melbourne, being pushed by big tech companies like OpenAI and Atlassian. But what do these data centres actually look like? Can you paint a picture for the listener about their size and what they do exactly?
So these are massive warehouses, and inside they're filled with thousands of servers, kilometres of cabling, you've got cooling and sometimes backup power generators. And what's changing rapidly in the last few years is really the size and scale of these data centres. So we're seeing the rise of what's called hyperscale facilities, and these are really massive data centres, much larger than we've had in recent years. And some of those have really extreme energy and water consumption. The International Energy Agency says, for example, that one hyperscale facility might use the same amount of power as, say, a regional city of 100,000 people. So the scale is just, yeah, huge.
Huge. And the rise of AI over the last few years has been so rapid. For many people, it's become a part of everyday life, whether they're using things like ChatGPT to ask for recipes to just simply putting a query into Google. AI is everywhere. But experts are concerned about the environmental and climate impacts. Why does using something like ChatGPT take so much energy?
You're right. I mean, we are seeing, you know, in such a short period of time, AI being plugged into almost everything we do online. In many cases, whether people have asked for it or not. Mm. And we do know that both training and AI queries do use a lot of processing power. And once you kind of multiply that against, you know, what's happening on all of these platforms, all of the people and all of the tasks we're using AI for, that's a huge amount of processing that needs to happen in these data centers. I guess anyone who's used a computer at home or a laptop, you know, streaming some show in HD or playing a game will know that computers can heat up really quickly when they're trying to do a lot of work. And that's how we end up with this energy and water use to try to cool those computers and servers down and keep them operating efficiently.
Petra, you've reported that the demand for the water used to cool data centres in Sydney alone is expected to exceed the volume of Canberra's total drinking water within the next decade. That is just extraordinary. Why does AI guzzle so much water?
It's kind of hard to comprehend, isn't it? Those figures from Sydney Water, and in Melbourne too, we've seen Melbourne Water suggest that a typical hyperscale data centre would use more water than almost all of the current top water users that they have currently. So it's just huge, and it's really for cooling. So data centres are cooled, I guess, in one of two ways. It's a bit like your household air conditioning. People either have your evaporative cooling, which uses a lot more water as a means to cool down your house, or you have air cooling, which is a more common type of air conditioning. So the data centers that use a lot of water tend to use more of that evaporative cooling method, whereas the ones that are using more electricity are using air cooling as a way to keep all those servers running efficiently.
Mm. And what are the concerns about data centers using draining water resources in a country that is prone to drought?
Yeah, we know certainly environmental groups have already expressed concerns about this. We know in Victoria, for example, there already isn't enough water to service residential and business users and provide water for the environment. So things like river flows and environmental systems that rely on water. So adding another huge water user, there really isn't enough to go around. And so what some environmental groups are calling for is a requirement for these centres at the minimum to use recycled water for cooling if that's their cooling method.
So data centres needed to run AI require both a lot of energy and a lot of water. What are experts saying about what that means for our energy transition, for our transition to net zero?
So AEMO, which is Australia's energy market operator, has done some kind of modelling around this, and they think that within the next 5 years, data centre demand is going to triple. So actually by 2030, the data centre industry is going to be using more power from the grid than electric vehicles. So just to give you a kind of sense of the scale, and that's going to be an even larger proportion when it comes to Sydney and Melbourne, because that's where most of these facilities are and are also being developed. In Sydney and Melbourne, it's roughly around 10% of each state's electricity. So the kind of energy demand we're expecting is pretty huge. You might have heard that a lot of these technology companies often say things like, oh, they're going to power their centres by renewable energy.
Mm.
Obviously, that's a good thing. But many of the experts we spoke to for these articles said that the overall picture was a lot more complicated than that. We do know that in Australia, we're already struggling to build enough renewable energy to meet our energy and also our emissions targets. So adding all these energy-hungry data centres is going to make that task harder. As one of the experts we spoke to, Ketan Joshi, said, he said, you're running harder to stay in the same spot. And I think that's a really great analogy for what is going to be required.
Absolutely. You've also written that the electricity needed for these data centres is so great that in the United States, some companies have paid to restart dormant nuclear power stations. In Australia, what are the concerns that these centres will increase rather than decrease our reliance on coal and gas?
There are a lot of concerns about what it will mean. I guess we're kind of at the beginning of how this is going to pan out. But we do know also internationally that there's been a massive increase in global demand for gas turbines as well, which has been linked to data centres, with a lot of these places, even in Australia, proposing to install gas generators either as backup or as, you know, their main power source. Another issue that was raised by the people we spoke to, they talked about the fact that these centres, they kind of are these like large inflexible loads. So what that means is they're drawing energy from the grid at sort of these high levels pretty constantly. And of course, renewable energy is a variable source of energy that's actually complementary to the way we live our lives, but it doesn't sort of match well with the sort of demand that these centres have. And that means that at times when, say, there's lower wind, these centres are going to start encouraging more demand for fossil fuels. at times of low renewable energy. Mm. So there are those concerns being raised about what all this might mean.
We'll be right back. Is it clear yet if this exponential rise in data centres and the sort of uptake of generative AI has led or is leading to an increase in carbon emissions?
I guess we don't know yet in Australia how that is going to play out, but there are lots of people and industry groups raising concerns about whether data centres might impact on Australia's ability to meet its climate targets. For example, the Australian Industry Group, AI Group, they raised the concern that if the demand is so high from these data centres, they're worried about what that might mean for other industries that also use a lot of energy. Mm. And they're also worried about whether the increased power demand might mean, for example, that coal-fired power stations are kept open longer than they otherwise would have been without this growth.
So experts are raising concerns about how much energy these data centres need to operate. They're also raising concerns about water consumption. Is it clear how governments plan to address some of these issues to ensure that they don't have long-term implications for the environment and climate?
I think we're yet to see governments really tackle this issue head on. And it certainly doesn't feel like, as a member of the public, we have much say in what's happening. Mm. But I think it does kind of pose a bigger question, which is we're going to use all this energy and all this water. What are we actually doing with these generative AI? And I guess, is it worth it? Is it worth that, all those flow-on effects? And that's something that hasn't really been talked about a lot.
Do you think we could see community opposition to these data centres because of those impacts?
I think we have started to see that in other countries, places like the US, where they've been a bit ahead in terms of the rollout of these sorts of facilities. We haven't seen a lot in Australia, but we have in the last couple of weeks seen industry groups like AI Group starting to raise concerns. It's really only been a couple of years. People are really only catching on to this issue, what it means for energy and water. It may be something we start to see over time.
It is a fascinating issue. Thanks so much for your time, Petra.
Oh, thanks for having me.
That was climate and environment reporter Petra Stock. You can find more of her work on theguardian.com, and we've linked to her latest pieces on data centres on the Full Story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Miles Herbert. Sound design and mixing by Joe Koning. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget you can subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also leave us a review. I'm Noor Haidar. Thanks for listening.